Join me this morning in Genesis chapter 39. We'll begin in a moment with a reading from Genesis chapter 39. Before we do that, I want to invite your attention to the slide behind me and remind you that we're now less than two weeks away from our special study with Brother Don Truex. He will be with us, and his theme is building your dream home, and he will be focused on helping our families. I don't even know that I need to emphasize, do I, how important that study is for all of us. Your family is important to God, brothers and sisters, and it's important to this church family. And as we watch families around us crumble in this nation, how important is it to sit at the feet of a teacher who will bring us back to God and His plan for your family. So it's going to be a really, really important week of stuff. Well, is it a week, Jeff? It's sort of an odd week. We're going to begin on Friday night with the keynote lesson, It All Begins at Home. And then on Saturday evening, Keeping Sex Sacred. That's going to be more of a class format. We've got a variety of settings and formats for these sessions. And by the way, we know that Saturday night's a little sensitive. So if you'd like your younger ones not to be in that session, we'll have some things going on for the younger kids, a Bible trill going on in the back for them. So there will be an opportunity, if you would prefer that they not be in there, something for them. And then on Sunday morning, mom, dad, and the kids, Sunday evening, he'll sit down with Jeff and I for a text talk and talk about second generation faith. And then he's not going home, folks. Monday night, he's going to do something with the elders and deacons. Tuesday night, he's going to meet with the prayer group and do a lesson on prayer. It'd be great if we could get everyone to come to that so you could see what's been going on with that. And maybe you might want to join that group on Tuesday nights. And finally, he'll close on Wednesday. Marathon marriages is his last topic. So I hope you'll keep all that in mind. Be praying about this special effort. We're hoping it's really going to help our families. And please, please carve out some time so that you can be available for these segments. I think you'll be blessed by this time we're going to spend together. Okay, wanted to mention that. Now let's get into the Word. I'm in Genesis 39. I want to read a little episode from the life of Joseph, and then we'll work with that this morning for our study. Genesis 39, I'm in verse 1. Are you there? The text says, "Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an Egyptian officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the bodyguard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, so he became a successful man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. Now his master saw that the Lord was with him and how the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and became his personal servant. And he made him overseer over his house, and all that he owned he put in his charge. It came about from the time that he made him overseer in his house and over all that he owned, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house on account of Joseph. Thus the Lord's blessing was upon all that he owned in the house and in the field. So he left everything he owned in Joseph's charge. And with him there, he did not concern himself with anything except the food which he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. It came about after these events that his master's wife looked with desire at Joseph. And she said, "Lie with me." I don't know that any of us will ever find ourselves in exactly the same predicament that Joseph finds himself in here at this pivotal moment in his life. But make no mistake, brothers and sisters, that fundamentally we must engage this same struggle. And we have to do it every day, many times, every day. We too have to struggle with temptation. It gets back to a fundamental problem that we have. And oddly enough, Troy connected us with this in his song. We didn't even plan that, and it just kind of worked out. In 1 Peter 1, remember the passage you read at the beginning? 1 Peter 1, God calls me and you to live lives of holiness. The admonition is, be holy, God says, as I am holy. That's our calling. That's our desire. The trouble is that every day we are battling an adversary who is trying to do everything he can to corrupt us. And so disciples are called out onto the battlefield to wage this struggle for our holiness. Maybe it'll be a temptation that looks something like Joseph's temptation. Maybe an inappropriate flirtation with a coworker, or the temptation to look at a pornographic website. Or maybe it'll look completely different than that. Maybe it'll be the temptation to gossip about somebody. Or the temptation to be unfair and cruel in our judgments, or to let our anger get beyond the boundaries God has set for us. Make no mistake, we have to wage the same struggle too, and we wage it every day. What I'd like to suggest is that if we are to be victorious, there's some hard realities about this struggle with temptation that we see in Joseph's story, I think, and that we need to see and that we need to be ready for if we're going to be victorious. The good news is that I think we can win our struggles with temptation. We got to know what we're dealing with. We got to be ready for them. So there are four things in this story, four hard lessons about the battle with temptation that I want you to consider with me this morning, and then we'll be done. Let me begin with this. One of the things when I look at this story that I see is this. I think it's important that we know when we are in danger. That's one of the things that I see in this story. We need to recognize when we are in danger. Now, let me ask you, can you see how Joseph is in danger here? Think about it. You have a young man in this story, right? This is not a guy in his 40s. This is a guy who may well still be a teenager. He may be like Justice's age when all of this is going down. And he's a long way from home. He's way down in Egypt. And you know how that is when you're a long way from home. There is this sense of anonymity. Nobody in Egypt knew who Joseph was. Nobody cared. And frankly, nobody back home would know what he was doing in Egypt. Nobody had a cell phone. They could take a picture and shoot a text to mom. And he's a young man. Let's not do him the disservice of making him out to be some kind of a spiritual superhero who had been unaffected by this temptation. He's a young man with the same passions and desires that any young man would have. And in essence, what happens to him here is an Egyptian woman is offering herself to him. Can you see it? He's in danger. He is vulnerable. And what I think is important to notice here is that the adversary uses this circumstance to try to take him down. The reason I wanted you to notice that with me is I don't think it's any different with us. I think the adversary, too, is looking for circumstances where we are vulnerable so he can take us down, too. Now, as you're processing that, think about Ephesians 4, right? Ephesians 4, verse 26. What did Paul say in Ephesians 4, 26? Be angry. Can you finish it? Be angry and yet do not sin, right? Do not let the sun go down on your anger. Don't hang on to it a long time. And what does verse 27 say? Do not give, yes, the devil an opportunity. Do you see it? Satan understands, brothers and sisters, that when we are angry, we are in danger. We are vulnerable. And so he would like to take advantage of that. He would like to exploit that. Can you think about other seasons when we might be in danger? In fact, think about what are your seasons of danger. When is it particularly dangerous for you? Maybe when you're under stressed, demanding deadlines, a lot of pressure at work, a lot of pressure with commuting. Y'all can tell I have trouble with traffic. It just comes up all the time. Maybe when things aren't good in your marriage. Young people, maybe it is the pressure of not being comfortable in your own skin, and you're hungry for other people's acceptance and approval and vulnerable to their pressure. Here's the thing that I want you to see. This is important. Even though Joseph is in a mess, he never uses his mess as a justification for doing the wrong thing. Do you see that? It would have been awfully easy to say, look at this situation that God put me in or God abandoned me in and feel justified to do the wrong thing. You never can. He never uses his circumstance as a justification for sin, and we can't either, knowing that this is how the devil works. He preys on us when we're vulnerable, knowing that's true. We can't use our situation as a justification for doing the wrong thing. So can I be real plain about that this morning? It doesn't matter how badly you feel like somebody in your church family has treated you. It's never okay to gossip about them. You got a problem with them? Jesus said, go talk to them. And nobody else. And it doesn't matter how broken your marriage is, what's wrong, how discouraged you're feeling about that. It is never, never okay to cheat. Never. And I don't care how much pressure you feel. From your friends at school, co-op, to drink or use drugs or have sex. There's a lot of pressure on young people about that. It is never, never okay to cave to that pressure, knowing that the adversary is using our circumstances, using those situations where we are vulnerable to take advantage of us. We can never use our circumstances as an excuse for sin. Lesson number one, I got a second one to consider. Lesson two is we need to make sure that we do not pause. Sounds like a weird lesson, doesn't it? Go back to verse number 8, because I want you to notice how Joseph responds to Potiphar's wife. In fact, if you look back at verse 7, that's where we left off, right? Can you still see verse 7? In my translation, I'm using New American Standard this morning, the last three words of verse 7 are the words of Potiphar's wife. She says, lie with me. Do you see that? Now, will you look at the first three words of verse 8? But he refused. There's the whole story right there. You see it? She says, lie with me. And he refuses. In fact, what's interesting to me is at least the words in the text don't allow for anything else. When this young Hebrew slave is enticed by the master's wife, it appears from the way the text is worded that he shuts her down. It's like he doesn't even give her a moment's consideration to what she has proposed. He's not even willing to think about it. Frankly, why should he? I mean, he knows that what she's propositioned him is wrong. Anything but no would have been a step in the wrong direction. Now, I know that kind of seems obvious, and maybe you're sitting there thinking, wow, I had to get up, having lost the hour, and come and listen to David say, you know, when someone proposes that you do the wrong thing, just say no. I will own that it seems obvious if you will agree with me that we're not very good at that. And sometimes it's what gets us into trouble. When I am confronted with the temptation to do something that I know is wrong, sometimes something that I know is wrong, but I really want to do it. Sometimes if I'll just pause and think about it a little bit, kind of run it through my mind. You know what we can do, folks? We can take something that we know is wrong and we can figure out a way to feel like it's okay. Sometimes that pause really gets us into trouble. And so I hope you'll take away this morning the last three words of verse 7 and the first three words of verse 8 and the fact that there is no pause in between. That when Joseph was confronted with the temptation to do something he knew was wrong, his answer is immediate and it's firm. He said no. Now, there's a lot more going on here that we need to look at. I want to go on with verse 8 and verse 9 because, interestingly, there is this little speech that Joseph gives Potiphar's wife that the Holy Spirit records for us. And in this little speech, it's like the Spirit pulls back the curtain on Joseph's mind and allows us to know what he's thinking about as he processes and handles this situation. And I think there's a lot here to be unpacked. Look with me beginning in verse 8. It says, "But he refused, and he said to his master's wife, 'Behold, with me here, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house, and he has put all things he owns in my charge. There is no one greater than the house than I, and he has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do this great evil and sin against God?'" I'm tempted, Jeff, just to preach a whole sermon on those two verses. Wow, there is a lot here. I think there's a lot to learn about Joseph just in this little speech that he gives. One of the things that I know when I read this is that all that was wrong in his house, and listen, Joseph grew up in a terribly dysfunctional family, but with all that was messed up in his family, somewhere along the way, someone got something right. Because this teenage kid knew that you do not have sex with another man's wife. Somewhere along the way, someone ingrained that on his heart. In fact, if you look at the end of verse 9, he doesn't just say that would be wrong to do. Do you see it? He said, "How could I do this great evil?" Do you see that? You don't do that. In fact, it seems to me as I read this, that this young teenage kid has a higher regard for the marriage of Potiphar's wife than she does. Do you see that? He goes through that list of all that Potiphar's done with me. And then he says, "He has withheld nothing from me except you." Why? Because you are his wife. And I don't have any business being with you in this way. And then it occurs to me that Joseph is thinking about God. How could I do this great evil and sin against God? And that tells me some things about Joseph. All the way down in Egypt, a long, long way from home, he understands that God is still God in Egypt. And God still sees what happens in Egypt. And if I do this thing, I'm not just offending Potiphar, I'm offending God too, and that mattered to him. You know what I see when I read these two verses, this little speech of Joseph? I see a kid possessed with powerful convictions. Do you see that? And they made a difference in this moment, folks. And so, I think one of the important lessons for me and you is that we too need to be wired with powerful convictions. Convictions that come from God's word, his standard about what is right and what is wrong. How much is that needed in our culture today? With all the crazy ideas that folks have today about right and wrong, how vital is it to have our convictions rooted in what God said in his word and what is really true? So that I am able in any situation to immediately size up and know this is what's right and this is what's wrong because this is what comes from the Creator. How important is it that we write those convictions on the heart of our children? Y'all ever hear parents today say something like, I just want my kids to grow up and figure out things for themselves. Ever heard people say that? I don't like to impose my values on my kids. I kind of want them to learn their values for themselves. Can I be plain with you all this morning? Because you know I'm really reluctant to ever talk real plainly about stuff, right? But that's just about one of the dumbest things that has ever been said. And it is not what disciples do. Jesus said, or Paul said rather, bring your children up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. The text of Deuteronomy 6 says, let God in our covenant be the atmosphere that fills your house. We don't leave it to our kids to figure it out. We're training them in what is right, convictions that come from God's word, so that when they have their moment with Potiphar's wife, they're not trying to figure it out. They're like Joseph. They know exactly what they're supposed to do. We need to be people with strong convictions. Let me give you one more, and then I'm going to be done. One of the hard lessons. This is my least favorite. I wish I could just stop, because I don't like this last one. The last hard lesson to take away from this story is we need to anticipate suffering. Because sometimes that's what follows when you do what's right. You suffer. I don't want to say that. You know what I'd like to be able to tell our young people? I'd like to be able to say to young people, when you're faced with temptation, if you will stand up and you will do the right thing, here's what's happened. As soon as you take your stand, the heavens are going to open and all these angels are going to break out and sing songs celebrating what you've just done. And a whole line of people will want to shake your hand and give you a high five and commend you. Wow, that was a really courageous stand against peer pressure. Wouldn't that be great? And we know it's not that way. It isn't that way in this story. If we were to read on through the text, what we find is that Potiphar's wife didn't take no for an answer, and she pressed Joseph to see how committed he was to his convictions. And when she figured out that he was committed and wasn't going to give in, her lust turned to rage, and there's that false accusation, and he ends up in a cell in an Egyptian dungeon. That's his reward. That's what he got for doing the right thing. A cell in an Egyptian dungeon. I have to tell you, it just makes my blood boil when I read part of this story. It's so unfair. If anyone ever deserved a medal for doing the right thing, it's Joseph right here in Genesis 39. And that is not what he got. He got prison. It is one of the hard realities of this struggle. And sometimes when we do what's right, there are no angelic choruses that sing, no bands, no one congratulating us. Sometimes what it is suffering. I'd like to tell young people, for example, who are tempted to drink, maybe at their party and everyone's passing around a bottle. I'd love to tell them if they would just stand up and resist that their friends would say, oh, well, wow, that was really cool. What a courageous stand against peer pressure. The truth is some of your friends won't care. And some will be like Potiphar's wife. They'll press to see if you're really committed. Some won't want to be your friend anymore because you won't party with them. And I'd love to be able to tell our young ladies that if they got some boyfriend that's pressuring them about sex, if they'll just resist and say that ain't happening, that the boyfriend will say, wow, I'm so impressed with your convictions, and listen, I'm sorry I even went there. You can be assured it's never going to happen again. I'd love to tell them that's the way it would be. But the truth is, he may be like Potiphar's wife too, and just see how committed you are to that standard. And when he finds out that you're not, that you are committed to it, he just may dump you and find a girl who doesn't respect herself so much. I know where you're sitting this morning and you're thinking, wow, thanks for sharing that bright ray of sunshine this morning. I warned you. These are the hard realities of the struggles, brothers and sisters. And sometimes, in this struggle with temptation, the reward is suffering. We surely then must have some in the quiet recesses of their own heart, asking then why do what's right? If all I'm going to do is end up suffering, then why not cave and go along? And the answer is because it always pays off to do what's right. Eventually, it always pays off to do what's right. And when I say that, there are going to be some people who say, oh, I know. When the Lord comes, when it's judgment day, I'll be glad I did what's right. Don't be dismissive of that. That's a pretty big deal. But that's not what I'm thinking about. You don't always have to wait until judgment day to realize doing what was right was right. Joseph didn't have to wait that long. He did go through a season, and it wasn't a month or two. It was 13 years that he spent dealing with a season of trouble in Egypt. But if you know the story, if we read on through it this morning, you know this is going to turn around for Joseph, right? And that eventually he'll become a very powerful leader in Egypt, a position that God would use to preserve his family, the lineage of the Messiah. He is a pivotal Bible character because of what he did at this pivotal moment in his life. Who knows what would have happened if he had made the wrong choice in this situation. And we don't always have to wait either until judgment day to see the rewards of doing what is right. Maybe some of our young people are getting pressure about experimenting with drugs or drinking and things like that. And maybe that's been a struggle. Maybe you had to fight that battle. Here's my admonition to you. Keep fighting. Keep resisting. Don't cave to that temptation. And I promise you, if you'll just hang on a little while, even if you suffer in the moment, if you'll hang on for another decade, when you're 28 or 30 or 35, and you look back on that decision, you'll be really glad that's a choice you make. Because I promise you, when people get a decade beyond their youth, when they're 30, 35, 40, certainly by the time you're my age, nobody at 58 is looking back on their teen years and saying, you know what where I really messed up? I didn't smoke enough dope when I was in high school. I didn't drink enough while I was in college. Nobody says that, folks, but I promise you, I know the people in their 40s and 50s and 60s who look back on high school and college and the choice they made about dope or alcohol, and they're saying, man, I'd like a redo on that. I'd like to get to go make that choice again. I would say the same thing about your sexual purity. It may be a struggle right now when all the kids seem to be having sex, and it's a pretty high percentage before marriage. And you may find that to be a struggle. Here's my admonition. Keep struggling. Keep resisting. Keep doing the right thing. Because I promise you, if you just give yourself a little window of time, like another decade, 10 years, when you get in your 30s, and now you're married and you have a family of your own, you're going to look back and be happy about the choice you made. Because nobody gets into their 30s and 40s and looks back on their youth and said, you know where I really messed up is I wasn't more promiscuous when I was in college. I really wish I had slept around more. Nobody says that, right? But I know a lot of people, if they could go back and make another choice about that, they'd like a do-over. They'd like to do that again. Make a different choice. And if you're in a bad place in your marriage, and there's somebody else, and an opportunity, and you're tempted, and struggling, hear me on this. You keep saying no. And get yourself out of that situation, because your marriage can be repaired if you will choose to. And when you do, you will be thrilled as you look back and celebrate that you didn't throw it all away for one dumb night of passion. And I know the names of those people too, who did cave to the temptation and destroyed their marriage and their family, and they're dealing with the carnage. And man, if they could get a do-over on that, if they could go back and make a different choice, they would take it immediately. And if not in this life, certainly when the end does come, and it is, and we're called before the throne, and we will be, to answer before Jesus for the life that we had lived, for the deeds done in the body, Paul says, whether good or evil. When that moment comes, and it is, I will celebrate my choices. I will celebrate the choice to be holy and not to cave to the temptations of the adversary. That day is coming, brothers and sisters. The question is, are you and I ready for it? Maybe temptation has been a losing battle for you. Maybe you have caved. Maybe right now your life is in a mess. One of the great things about being a preacher is we get to share good news with you this morning. There's time to do something about that. I will not be able to say that forever, but I can say it this morning. There is time to do something about that. Your Father in heaven is eagerly hoping you will decide to abandon that path and come back to Him and to His. He is eager to forgive you. He is eager to wash away your sins. He is eager to make you ready for the day that is coming. Would you let Him do that? If you have a need to come back to God, we want to help you. We want to join in heaven's celebration over that decision. We just need you to decide that you're going to walk with Him. That's where you are this morning. We're going to sing this song to encourage you. While we do, we want you to come on down to the front. Come right now while we stand, while we sing together.